So good evening, folks. Good to see you all. Tonight I plan to continue this series of talks I've been giving on the four Brahma Viharas. And tonight we're going to talk about joy. It's always something cheerful. This is a specific kind of joy, a specific flavor of joy, I suppose. It's called mudita in Pali. And mudita is often translated as sympathetic joy. In other words, joy that you experience when you encounter joy someplace else. And first of all, I just want to point out, often when we think in Buddhist teachings, you know, it's all about suffering and all these very serious philosophical things. But the Buddha actually talked a lot about joy, and he also, the Buddha was known as the happy one. He was joyful quite most of the time. Not always. I mean, he had to scold people and had difficult times. But he was known as the happy one. And but like the other two, like metta and karuna, you know, loving kindness and compassion, we have to cultivate joy. Just like we have to cultivate the other ones, we have to do something. And once again, our first thought may be, well, wait a second. I thought, why do I need to try to be joyful? Why do I have to cultivate it? Isn't joy something that just sort of naturally arises, sort of spontaneously arises? Yeah, sometimes. But unfortunately, for most of us, this isn't true all the time or most of the time at all. So the question quickly becomes, well, how can I practice being joyful? This is just another practice, right? And first of all, here we are back at, you know, the basic teachings of the Buddha. We have to realize that the things that when we normally look for things to bring us happiness don't work that well. No matter how much we acquire, no matter how much praise we receive, no how much status we gain, it's never enough. It's never enough. We keep thinking we need more. If I'm going to be happy, you know, I got $1 million, well, actually, I need $10 million, you know, or whatever. You know, that's how people's minds work. We always need more. We need more stuff, you know, and that's how we think we're going to get happy, whether stuff is physical stuff or emotional stuff or whatever. But mudita is different. With mudita, you don't have to get anything. You don't have to acquire anything. You remember, this is called sympathetic joy. So basically, all you have to do is be mindful. So all you have to do is be mindful and notice when you're in the presence of joy. And let that joy you experience in others evoke joy in you. That's it. It seems so simple, right? It's just all we have to do is when we see someone joyful, whether it's a person or a being like a squirrel. You ever seen a happy squirrel? And we have lots of happy squirrels running around our yard, so I always get happy watching the squirrels. But it's like, it's all we need to do is just tune into the joy that's all around us all the time. But we don't. You know, it's just in your daily life, you know, you look around and you see someone, you know, some kids playing in a playground, you know, or a dog going for a walk. It's nothing happier than a dog going for a walk most of the time. But both the dog and the person walking the dog look pretty happy usually. They're getting exercise and the dog's with its person and it looks really, you know, just some dogs just look happy, smiley even. Or just someone sitting on the bench, sunning themselves. You know, it's like, It's just, or it's some a couple walking blissfully along hand in hand. There's all kinds of joy all around us all the time, but we have to tune into it. Now, on one level, what the Buddhist teachings say is that if we have a heart full of loving kindness, here we are back at metta. If we have a heart full of loving kindness and we encounter joy in the world, mudita naturally arises. A heart full of loving kindness that encounters joy naturally will experience mudita. Sympathetic joy, just that'll be the cause and condition. The necessary condition is simply encountering joy if the heart is full of loving kindness. There's a big if, of course. And so, how can we deal with this? Well, one of it, obviously, the more we practice metta, the more we are mindful of what's going on, that's going to help. But in the Theravada tradition, all of these Brahma Viharas have specific sort of meditative practices that go along with them. In this case, the starting point would be to just think of someone you know who's just one of these really happy people. We all know people like that. People are just naturally happy, or have learned how to cultivate happiness themselves, whatever. We all know people like this. They're just happy people. So think of that and then see them really clearly in the mind, visualize them, and then actually just repeat the phrase, may your happiness continue, may it increase. Not only do we want people to be happy, we want them to continue, but we want them to be happier. This is the wish we have for people who we encounter. And this is, we start with someone who's already happy because it's easy, because we sort of tune into their happiness. But now we're just sort of getting, by tuning into them and repeating this phrase, we're sort of getting a free hit of mudita. We're actually just connecting to that happiness very consciously by choosing someone who's happy. And then over time, we add in, just like we do in metta or in practicing compassion, we add in other categories of beings. And we start to discover that, wishing people not only that the happiness continue, that it increase, sometimes isn't so easy. Because we have reactive patterns that prevent us from feeling this way. We have, especially around certain people in certain situations. I'm going to read a lot tonight from Sharon Salzberg's book, Loving Kindness. And I want to start with this. It is a rare and beautiful quality to feel truly happy when others are happy. When someone rejoices in our happiness, we are flooded with respect and gratitude for their appreciation. When we take delight in the happiness of another, we genuinely rejoice at their prosperity, success, or good fortune, rather than begrudging it in any way. We are abiding in mudita, sympathetic joy. The root of the Pali word mudita means to be pleased, to have a sense of gladness. The Buddha called mudita the mind deliverance of gladness. Isn't that a great phrase? The mind deliverance of gladness. Because this force of happiness actually liberates us. Unlike a state of mere excitement or giddiness, the quality of sympathetic joy challenges our deep assumptions about aloneness, loss, and happiness, and shows us another possibility. It defeats many of the qualities of consciousness that bind us. So much of our unhappy condition as living beings comes from the constricting effect of our negativity towards each other. We limit ourselves and we limit others. We judge each other, compare ourselves to each other, demean and envy each other, and we ourselves suffer the strangling effects of these limitations. Because they are There are so many constricting mind states that are impediments to mudita. Sympathetic joy is considered the most difficult of all the Brahma Viharas to develop. I find that, isn't that amazing? That joy is the most difficult one. You'd think joy would be easy, right? How sweet is it to feel joy all the time, right? But so potent is this quality that expressing it can defeat the aversion and attachment that binds us. Now, first of all, I want to speak from my own. This is what Sharon says. From my own personal experience, when I actually was practicing all four of the Brahma Viharas 10 days each on a long retreat, I'd do 10 of one, then 10 of the next. When I got to mudita, it was like, oh, this is so easy. It was just, I didn't find it the hardest, I found it the easiest. So, this is her point of view. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be, maybe for other people, it's going to be so difficult, but it's always going to be difficult for a variety of reasons. And some of us may encounter some of these. So, what I want to do is spend a lot of this evening talking about the different ways we get in the way through our habitual patterns of mind to stop us from actually feeling mudita, actually experiencing it, actually cultivating it, actually feeling this joy when we encounter joy in others. First of these, and she had a little list there, it's called judgment. Right? It's all too easy to believe or even insist that other people should behave just as we want them to, that they should pursue lifestyles and sources of happiness in precisely the ways we deem appropriate. With this orientation, no wonder we find it difficult to be happy for the countless people we can never control. We feel disgruntled and frustrated with others as they simply don't go about living their lives. How often do we do this when we think we see someone, just being happy, but they're being happy because, they just got a new truck. And it's got chrome wheels, and they're just like polishing it, and you can see how happy they are. And we judge, oh, drive one of those big gas guzzlers. What's wrong with them? Right? We judge, and we don't just tune into the joy that they're experiencing. And we do this over and over and over again in all kinds of ways about all kinds of subjects. It's like, and what we're doing is we're, instead of just tuning into the joy this person is feeling for whatever reason. They're on their way to watch a pro football game, which to me would be total torture, right? But for them, this is like, oh, so I got great tickets on the 40-yard line, and this is going to be just, my favorite team is playing. Now me, if it was hockey tickets, that would be different, of course. I mean, then I'd be really happy. And other people think, well, hockey, some of those guys hit each other with sticks. What's wrong with them? So someone would judge me for my happiness. And that's sort of the habitual patterns. We have certain ways, like she said, of like things should be this way, should people should behave this way, things should be like this. This is what should make people happy. And people are finding their happiness in other ways. We judge them for it. What's wrong with them? Right? And this is just stopping us from feeling their joy and feelings, that beautiful feeling of mudita, just tuning into their joy and feeling joyful. May their happiness continue. May they get a playoff tickets, That's what the football guy, right? I hope they get playoff tickets. That may even actually increase. Instead, it's like, oh no, what's wrong with them? Okay, so that's the first one, judgment. And then the next one is comparing. And this is a huge topic. There are whole suttas about this, or and I've actually given Dharma talks that do talk about nothing but comparing. But I'll read a little bit of what Sharon has to say here. Comparing ourselves to others is a powerful mental affliction. In Buddhist psychology, it is called conceit. When we are enmeshed in conceit, we are pulled outside ourselves, trying to know who we are and what our experience is by comparing ourselves to others. When am I in reference to that? Who am I in reference to that? Am I good enough in comparison to that? Whether we conclude that we are better than, worse than, or equal to another, when we measure ourselves against others, it causes us harm. As we constantly try to decide through comparison with others who we are, what is important about us, whether or not we are happy, that churning of the mind is itself undermines our happiness. Comparison or conceit is a gnawing, painful restlessness. I love that. That's a really great description of being caught in comparison. In traditional Buddhist teaching, they'll put it this way. When you compare yourself to someone else, or some other group of people for that matter, it's like, now I've separated myself. There's me and them. No matter what form, whether I'm looking, I think I'm better than them, I'm worse than them, I'm equal to them, doesn't make any difference. I'm always creating a sense of separate self, me and them. I'm disconnecting from the reality that there is no separation. And this is what causes the suffering. You know, so comparing is a way, and think of it like, you know, we're looking at someone being happy, and we're thinking, wow, if they're so happy, why aren't I happy? How come I'm not? If they're so happy, why aren't I happy? How often do we get caught in that mind state of comparing ourselves to someone else who's really happy? And instead of just being happy that they're happy and experiencing that joy, we compare ourselves to them and then put ourselves down. Because we're not as happy as them. There must be something wrong with me because I'm not as happy as them. So once again, we've cut ourselves off from the source of the joy by creating this negative emotional mental pattern, this pattern of comparing. Then we get to the next one. This is where we really get into trouble. It's called demeaning. Another definition of practicing mudita is to be non-demeaning. We may look at someone else's achievement or someone else's happiness and find ourselves wishing that their status or condition might be diminished, as if thereby our own would be increased. You know, this is the, they don't deserve to be happy. They're not good enough to be happy. I'm a serious Buddhist. I'm you know, and they're just this Yahoo guy with their new truck. They shouldn't be happy. Shouldn't, it's not right that they're happy. I don't want them to be happy even. These are all thoughts of demeaning the other. And we get caught in that place because we just have a habit of mind, and there's certainly, this is where how we often react to people we have difficulty with, you know, which in the metta world we call the difficult person, right? This is people that we connect to these people, and every time we connect to them, it's like, ugh. This is what arises with those people. It's like we put them down. Literally, I mean, it's like, that means I'm up higher than them, right? That's why I put them down. So it's a form of comparing, but it's like, it's fiercer. It has a more nastiness to it. And we may think, oh, well, you know, I never do that, but we all do, you know, and it just, think about, you know, there's always some group of people that we get caught in this place with, you know, and then we go, they don't deserve to be happy. And there's another level to this. You know, this, like, they shouldn't be that happy. Part of it is we sort of think at some level, we think, you know, there's only so much happiness to go around. And if they're that happy and they don't really deserve it, there's going to be less happiness for me. It's like there's some, how about someone, there's like there's this limited supply of happiness, you know? And we want to sort of their happiness to go down so my happiness can go up. It's like, how foolish. But this is where our minds often go. It's like into this place of, especially with people we don't like, or where we feel like we don't like them, they're bad people, they're evil people, they don't deserve to be happy, or maybe they're just jerks. They're not bad or evil, they're just jerks, and those jerks just don't be, they don't deserve to be happy. Something, there's, they don't have the qualities of a wholesome person that should bring happiness. Therefore, they shouldn't be that happy. But part of it is, if they're that happy, then they're taking some of the happiness pool for themselves that should be coming towards me instead. And this is like, we have to just go, oh, actually, in the sutta, the Buddha says, this, that mudita, just like metta and karuna, compassion, are immeasurables. There's not any limit to joy, ever. It isn't like a limited pool, and if they get more, I'm going to get less. If they get more and I tune into their happiness, I'll just get more. It's just when I demean them, when I say they don't deserve it, but there's something wrong with them, that's when I lose. Now I'm caught in an unwholesome, negative, averse mind state. How can I be happy at that point? I can't be full of aversion and be happy at the same time. Okay, the meaning. Then the next one, this is another one that we have to watch for. Envy. Envy, as we all know, to our distress, is the inability to endure the success, prosperity, or happiness of others. It absolutely hates to see these things in other people. The experience of envy only functions to produce more and more dissatisfaction with our own condition and to make us quite miserable. In English, we use the phrase eaten up by envy. That says it all. Envy devours us. We cease to be centered within our lives, but instead are perpetually out of balance as we lean into the lives of others, regretting their happiness, real or imagined. So that mind state of envy always has this flavor of, it's not fair. It's not fair that they're happy. I should be just as happy as them. I should just have all the conditions that they have that make them so happy. Once again, it's just a, it's partly, it's sort of related to comparing, but it's a sort of a special form of comparing where there's this other layer of, not only do they not deserve it, but I don't have it at all. So now I'm sort of like, woe is me energy is going on here. Now what's wrong, or, oh, there's something wrong with me that I can't feel what they're feeling. I can't be as joyful as them. Once again, we're just caught in this unwholesome mind state that catches, stops us from just experiencing their joy and taking it in and enjoying their joy, so to speak. And finally, and this is one that I was just rereading this book before this talk. And oh, I came across this one. Oh. Never thought of it quite this way before. Here's one more mind state we have to watch for. Boredom. I went, boredom? But see what Sharon has to say. Mudita is also said to eliminate boredom. The first time I read this claim, I wondered, how could sympathetic joy overcome boredom? I came to the conclusion that mudita eliminates boredom because it gives us so many reasons to feel happy and connected. I want to read that sentence again because it just amazes me. I came to the conclusion that mudita eliminates boredom because it gives us so many reasons to feel happy and connected. Boredom is based on a sense of separateness and a turning away that we feel when we experience certain degrees of aversion. When we stop paying attention to the little things in life and the little things in our meditation practice as well, we find ourselves in a state of boredom. By reconnecting to the little things, we reawaken again to a delightful kind of openness. On one of my long retreats, I was really, well, to be honest with you, struggling. The first, I think, is the first long retreat. So it's about halfway through the first long retreat. So I've been there in a couple of weeks, and I went into, for a teacher meeting, and I just sat down and said, "God, this stuff is so boring." And the teacher, Howie, just laughed. He just laughed and laughed. He said, "You're just not paying enough attention. You're letting your mind, you're sort of only half practicing. You're not really tuning into what's going on." So if we can be mindful of the happiness all around us, if we can tune into it, then bored, how can we be bored? Because we're being mindful. If this boredom and that sort of blah feeling that comes with boredom is like not being putting enough effort, not putting enough energy, not being mindful enough, not paying enough attention, not tuning in clearly enough. That's all it is. And so boredom gets wiped out by mudita. Because how can you be bored and feel joyful at the same time? I can't imagine the two being in simultaneous mind states even. So all of the I'm it sounds like I've been talking through all this negative stuff, right? All of these things, these are just like the warning flags. I wanted to wave all the warning flags. Here's all these mind states you have to watch for that prevent you from feeling sympathetic joy. And of course, it doesn't have to be the case that we experience these things if we're mindful. This is where the Brahma Viharas and mindfulness are really tightly related. If I can be mindful of the mind states that arise as I encounter joy in others, then I'm just naturally gonna feel joyful because I'm starting to tune in and go, "Oh, there I am. There's that envy thing I'm doing again," or whatever. Pick your favorite way of being grumpy when people are joyful around you. And we see it and we go, "Oh." Without mindfulness, we don't see it. And these are just all very deeply ingrained habitual patterns of mind. And we just fall right back into them again. And we don't let ourselves feel joyful. Then we can practice. We can overcome our unwholesome habitual tendencies and start seeing the joy in the world. We need to consciously tend our mental field, in a sense, our mental field, all the stuff that arises all the time, and cultivate it to find joy by eliminating or realizing that these other things that are arising are just getting in the way. And they have no basis in truth at all. They're all just mental fabrications. All of these things that I've been talking about, demeaning, envy, boredom, all of them are just mental formations that we use to beat ourselves up so we can't feel joy. That we won't let ourselves feel joy. Just instead, we'd rather wallow in one or more of these unwholesome mind states instead. And here's one more level of this. A lot of this has to do with feeling gratitude. Encountering joy and just being grateful. So that's what works. That's what we're encountering in the world. Because there's lots of stuff out there going on in the world that isn't very joyful. Let's be real honest about that too. We can't for one second deny that. So we should be really grateful, feel great gratitude when we encounter joy. I love going for walks and watching people walk golden retrievers. Have you ever seen a golden retriever not smiling? I mean, goldens just have this sort of face shape. Something about it, that they just like, and they're walking along and their tails wagging and they're just like so happy looking. And I go, oh, great, a golden retriever. It's like, it just makes me so happy just to see a golden retriever walking along with their person. I don't have dogs. I'm not a dog. I don't actually own a dog. I've never have owned a dog. But I love to see other people's dogs. And this is, that's where gratitude comes in. Gratitude is like, it's a way to open yourself up to mudita. To feel gratitude for, you go outside and it's sunny and you're walking or you're just, oh my God, look at those people are just doing what they're doing and they look so happy. And that makes me happy. Just that. That's all we need to do. Just that. And then we become more joyful ourselves. And here's the important part. When we're more joyful, when we tune in to the joy of others and connect to it and feel more joy ourselves, everyone around us feels that. We affect everyone around us by our joyfulness. Our natural tendency to be joyful makes other people joyful. Or gives them the opportunity to also experience mudita, to put it in technical Buddhist terms, right? Happiness is contagious. Something I've discovered over and over and over again. If you're around, if I'm feeling in one, if I'm in this space of feeling joy and tuning into joy and just like being there. And I'm not talking about being a bliss bunny. I'm just talking about tuning into it and like really being truthful that I'm experiencing happiness around me and it makes me happy. People feel that. People like to feel appreciated in that way, just in that simple way, as Sharon said. It multiplies. It's a multiplier effect. What the world needs now is more joy. Let me tell you, if we can all be somehow become a source for more joy in the world, thank goodness. If that's what our practice brings us to, if that's all our practice ever brings us to, is to become a joy multiplier out there in the world, hooray, hooray, hooray. Because the world certainly needs that. That's what I have to say about mudita. I do want to read a poem. So it's going to be a short Dharma talk night, I can tell. But this is from Dana Fald's book Going In In. It's called Life Here at the Edge. And she's basically encouraging us to tune in and be joyful. When love lights a fire in the heart, don't be so quick to quell the flames. To be fully alive is to welcome the beloved in countless names and guises, not turn away the wild with the tame. Drink your fill of longing. Let love wash through in waves that lift you up and carry both your daring and your fear straight to unknown places. Yes, there's danger in not staying safely cloaked in morality and labels, but there's life here at the edge, and a choice to be made between thoughtful abandon and passionate restraint. The plaintive cry of the heart can be ignored only at the price of a fully realized life. Throw arms wide to possibilities that move and call you to come forth in freedom and in fullness. Trust the seed of grace within to blossom without sin or sorrow, for you are surely big enough to hold the truth as it unfolds. That's a call for joy if I ever heard one.